So, a few days later, on a sunny morning of spring, Ogian strode beside him down the steep road from the Overfell, 15 miles to the great port of Gaunt. There, at the land gate, between carven dragons, the guards of the city of Gaunt, seeing the mage, knelt with bared swords and welcomed him. They knew him and did him honor by the prince's order and their own will. For 10 years ago, Ogion had saved the city from earthquake that would have shaken the towers of the rich down to the ground and closed the channel of the armed cliffs with avalanche. He had spoken to the mountain of Gaunt, calming it, and had stilled the trembling precipices of the Overfell as one soothes a frightened beast. Ged had heard some talk of this, and now, wondering to see the armed guardsman kneel to his quiet master, he remembered it. He glanced up almost in fear at this man who had stopped an earthquake. But Ogion's face was quiet, as always. And they went down to the quays, where the harbor master came hastening to welcome Ogion and ask what service he might do, and the mage told him. And at once he named a ship bound for the inmost sea, aboard which Ged might go as passenger. "Or they will take him as windbringer," he said, "if he has the craft. They have no weather worker aboard." "He has some skill with mist and fog, but none with sea winds," the mage said, putting his hand lightly on Ged's shoulder. "Do not try any tricks with the sea and the winds of the sea, Sparrowhawk. You are a landsman still. Harbormaster, what is the ship's name?"
"Shadow, from the Andrades, bound to Horttown with furs and ivories. A good ship, Master Ogion."
The mage's face darkened at the name of the ship, but he said, "So be it. Give this writing to the warden of the school on Roque, Sparrowhawk. Go with a fair wind. Farewell." And that was all his parting. He turned away and went striding up the street, away from the quays. Ged stood forlorn and watched his master go.
"Come along, lad," said the harbor master,
and took him down the waterfront to the pier, where Shadow was making ready to sail. It might seem strange that on an island 50 miles wide, in a village under cliffs that stare out forever on the sea, a child may grow to manhood, never having stepped in a boat or dipped his finger in salt water. But so it is. Farmer, goatherd, cattleherd, hunter, or artisan, the landsman looks at the ocean as at a salt-unsteady realm that has nothing to do with him at all. The village 2 days' walk from his village is a foreign land, and the island a day's sail from his island is a mere rumor, misty hills seen across the water, not solid ground like that he walks on. So to Ged, who had never been down from the heights of the mountain, the port of Gaunt was an awesome and marvelous place. The great houses and towers of cut stone and waterfront of piers and docks and basins and moorages. The seaport where 50 boats and galleys rocked at quayside or lay hauled up and overturned for repairs or stood out at anchor in the roadstead with furled sails and closed oar ports. The sailors shouting in strange dialects and the longshoremen running heavy laden amongst barrels and boxes and coils of rope and stacks of oars. The bearded merchants in furred robes, conversing quietly as they picked their way along the slimy stones above the water, the fishermen unloading their catch, coopers pounding and shipmakers hammering, and clam sellers singing and shipmasters bellowing, and beyond all the silent, shining bay. With eyes and ears and mind bewildered, he followed the harbor master to the broad dock where Shadow was tied up, and the harbor master brought him to the master of the ship. With few words spoken, the ship's master agreed to take Ged as passenger to Roque, since it was a mage that asked it, and the harbor master left the boy with him. The master of the Shadow was a big man, and fat, in a red cloak trimmed with Palawi fur, such as Andradean merchants wear. He never looked at Ged, but asked him in a mighty voice,
"Can you work weather, boy?"
"I can."
"Can you bring the wind?"
He had to say he could not, and with that the master told him to find a place out of the way and stay in it. The oarsmen were coming aboard now, for the ship was to go out into the roadstead before night fell, and sail with the ebb tide near dawn. There was no place out of the way, but Ged climbed up as well as he could onto the bundled, lashed, and hide-covered cargo in the stern of the ship, and clinging there, watched all that passed. The oarsmen came leaping aboard, sturdy men with great arms, while longshoremen rolled water barrels thundering out the dock and stowed them under the rowers' benches. The well-built ship rode low with her burden, yet danced a little on the lapping shore waves, ready to be gone. And then the steersman took his place at the right of the sternpost, looking forward to the ship's master, who stood on a plank let in at the jointure of the keel with the stem, which was carved as the old serpent of Andrad. The master roared his orders hugely, and Shadow was untied and towed clear of the docks by two laboring rowboats. Then the master's roar was, "Open ports!" And the great oars shot rattling out, 15 to a side. The rowers bent their strong backs while a lad up beside the master beat the stroke on a drum. Easy as a gull oared by her wings, the ship went now, and the noise and hurly-burly of the city fell away suddenly behind. And they came out in the silence of the waters of the bay, and over them rose the white peak of the mountain, seeming to hang above the sea. In a shallow creek in the lee of the southern armed cliff, the anchor was thrown over, and there they rode the night. Of the 70 crewmen of the ship, some were like Ged, very young in years, though all had made their passage into manhood. These lads called him over to share food and drink with them, and were friendly, though rough and full of jokes and jibes. They called him Goatherd, of course, because he was gauntish. But they didn't go further than that. He was as tall and strong as the 15-year-olds and quick to return either a good word or a jeer, so he made his way among them, and even that first night began to live as one of them and learn their work. And this suited the ship's officers, for there was no room aboard for idle passengers. Well, there was little enough room for the crew, and no comfort at all. In an undecked galley crowded with men and gear and cargo, but what was comfort to get? He lay that night among corded rolls of pelts from the Northern Isles and watched the stars of spring above the harbor waters and the little yellow lights of the city astern. And he slept and waked again, full of delight. Before dawn, the tide turned. They raised anchor and rowed softly out between the armed cliffs. And as sunrise reddened the mountain of Gaunt behind them, they raised the high sail and ran southwestward over the Gauntish Sea. Between Barnesk and Torhaven, they sailed with a light wind. And on the second day came in sight of Havnor,